and I'm in San Francisco at the Gold Cane with Christian from Triclops.
Hi, Shady. Thanks for having me.
Triclops get together. How did the band begin?
The band started in 2006, and me and Johnny, the singer, had just formed a kind of a. We were writing material together in hopes to have a band, and we wrote the first EP that we released as a band, and then lucked out and found our drummer Phil on a Craigslist ad, and. Which was totally demanding. Like, we posted all these, like, super high demands of, like, you better, you know, like, if you don't know who these drummers are, then don't write us back. And we listed all these influences and all this kind of stuff. And Phil actually called, and as soon as I played with him the first time, I knew, like, he was epic. And Larry is actually an old veteran of in a band called Victim's Family and Hellworms and Saturn's Flea Collar. He was just this, like, institution of a bass player, like, so we, like, kind of, like, scooted up to him and kind of meekly asked him if he'd be interested in joining our band and gave him a disc, and he loved it and came to a practice and, like, banged his head the whole time, and, like, so we lucked out and finished the EP, and so it's, I guess, sometime in the summer of 2006, maybe. So I think that's about when it was.
How long was that process from beginning to end there? Like, how much time?
It seemed to take forever because we were so excited to get the band off the ground, and we knew that the material was going to be, like, really different and challenging, and we wanted people to kind of, like, because we'd all been in other bands that people were kind of wondering what the hell we were going to do with this band. So I was in a band called Bottles and Skulls, and our singer, was in this band called Fleshies, and Phil was in a band called Lower 48, and of course Larry was in all those three bands that I previously mentioned. So when everyone kind of got word around, at least locally anyway, that we were all kind of playing together, they were like, all right, what the hell are they going to do? Like, you know, this is, like, kind of weird and strange that these dudes are going to be playing together. And so I think, like, those guys are so, like, Phil and Larry are so good that by the time when they heard the stuff and we started playing, it was probably only, like, a couple months later that we played our first show, which was in Oakland at a place that doesn't have shows anymore. It used to be called the Golden Bull. Oh, you know what? That's not true. We played a house party the first time and blew up both of our amps that night. Oh, okay. And I actually dislocated, I got a case of trigger finger that night, too, which is when your finger is stuck. Like that, like on a kind of a 90-degree angle. So that was our first show. So I thought that was actually off to a pretty roaring start.
Suffering for your art, that's good.
Kind of ridiculous, right?
So as a band, what's most important to you guys? Writing, touring, recording?
I think the whole thing. I mean, it. I think all of us, speaking on behalf of all of us, I really think that this band seems to be the band that all of us have been getting ready for to actually be in the first place. Like, all the bands that we've played in before, like, if it wasn't for those bands, we wouldn't be the players that we are, and we wouldn't be able to have, like, interaction the way we do, and we wouldn't be able to get rid of the ego that is the problem with a lot of bands where in the songwriting process, where if some guy, like, gets bummed about one certain riff, then they can't let that go, and, like, there's, like, drama, and there's phone calls behind people's backs and shit, like, it's a really unique process with us, and it really, really works. Like, we've all discovered we kind of try to head trouble off at the past because we've been doing this for a while, but at the same time, it almost feels like it's the first band we've ever been in because everything is so fresh, and we're doing it on a challenging level where it's like we're basically just trying to make things, like, completely, like, uncomfortable and not go with any preconceived notion of how things are supposed to go, and just, like, kind of writing fearlessly and, like, kind of, like, trying to, not even trying, just, like, bringing, like, the epicness of music back instead of, like, worrying about, like, a verse, chorus, verse situation. Just, like, not giving a shit about structure and, like, toning, I don't know, like toning things down to try to appeal to anybody. We're really being selfish pricks with this band, pretty much.
That's good, though.
It seems like any response that we've gotten, people are into it. So that's exciting. It's good to know that people care enough to get into it.
Well, it's one of the things that I've noticed, that when you talk to anybody around town that's been to any of your shows, everyone is just completely blown away and amazed at the energy that comes off you guys while you're playing. And I was just wondering, what is the driving force behind that live performance for you guys?
Man, I think for me, like, I am always inspired by watching drummers play, and the whole reason that Johnny and I actually got together to start this thing in the first place was because the first time I saw him play in Fleshies, like, he was on stage for like 5 seconds before he was out in the crowd, and I was just like blown away, and like just getting like crowd surfing and being back on the, like, you know, on the stage and like not missing a note and still singing like perfectly, that I pretty much wanted to just rip him off as a guitar player. So I don't know, it's just like everyone like is, none of us are in the situation where we're scared of being on stage. We're actually kind of like, you know, if there's more people, or even if it's 10 people and they're going like crazy or psyched drunk and yelling at us before we play, then it's still the same amount of energy. The translation is different, but it's just like, I guess it's just being in a band where you want to be in a band and you want to do it the way you want to see it. Like, you want to go out and see, like, you know, you want to see bands going for it. You want to see people just completely, like, just doing, obviously living in the moment, living their music, kind of like playing for your life, you know, kind of thing, and just seeing people sweat and just rip shit up, as opposed to get up there and, I mean, it's just, I don't have a problem with people actually getting up there and relaxing and standing still and really creating like a situation in a different way. I just think that's just not what any of us is at, where we're at personality wise. We just really get into the band. We're definitely not out there showboating. We're just really inspired by what we're doing, so we just get up there and deliver the way that we all, it's just a natural thing.
Well,
it's a fucking lot of fun to be involved in.
The fans are definitely appreciative from what I hear, because you're playing to them, for them, and for yourselves as well, it sounds like.
Definitely for them, though. I mean, like, you know, like, if it wasn't for them, I mean, I don't take it for granted for a second, anybody who pays attention or anybody who cares. I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing to me that people get into it. I mean, I know I'm the kind of person who hunts down music and goes to shows and stands in the front row and gets really stoked and yells at the top of my lungs, but, you know, like, I'm honored that anybody, fucking anybody, gives a shit at all.
That's great. It's fantastic.
It's just lucky. It's like, what do you want to do? You know, how do you want to live your life? You want to, you know, if you're a musician, there's people that get into it and they're like, oh, you know, I had a band in college and we had a good time and whoo, we were drunk, but thank God I took that good job. Where it's like, you know, the dudes in this band are just kind of like, no, dude, we're pretty much trying to go out there and play to as many people as possible, and it's like a sharing thing, like, share this with people, like, this is what, you know, this is what we're doing, and you don't have to give a shit, but we're lucky that people do.
So you've mentioned drummers quite a few times so far. What would you say are, out in the music world, movie world, literature, whatever, what are the major influences on Triclops?
For myself, I would say there's a specific drummer, since we're talking about drummers, there's a specific drummer that I actually am... And I think that I can speak for Phil, our drummer, the drummer of Triclops, in saying that we kind of share the obsession with this individual as far as just being really inspiring to watch and watching him play. And his name is John Theodore, and he used to be in a band called the Mars Volta. And I remember seeing him play at the Great American, and it was just like kind of one of those situations where all of a sudden... And I didn't want this to happen, but all of a sudden the band kind of like dissolved around him, and I was just stunned by him. And then I basically took that inspiration and tried to bring you know, play my guitar like a percussion instrument in a way where it's kind of more rhythmic and, you know, and just kind of raw, and I don't know, that was a big inspiration for me and Phil for sure. Johnny and I and Larry share a huge fondness for the Butthole Surfers and the Melvins. We all share, basically the whole band is just kind of like trying to do right by just paying homage to the aesthetic that bands like the Jesus Lizard, the Melvins, Scratch Acid, and the Butthole Surfers, and bands from back in that time period that were just not giving a shit and just doing whatever they wanted to do and touring behind it and getting a name for themselves because they were just uncompromising and just releasing whatever they wanted to do, and they weren't restrained by any kind of, like, you know, status quo or having to confine to... None of those guys were in a situation where they wanted to do anything but just get whatever the hell this was inside of them out, you know. So that's a big... That kind of philosophy is a big influence. Johnny is a... We're lucky enough to have Johnny as our singer, and Johnny is one of the most intelligent people I know, and he is totally wrapped up in being an archaeologist right now. So basically what we do is, instead of writing about relationships and whatever, city situations or whatnot, Johnny kind of blesses us with the fact that he writes from a more anthropological point of view, where, like, we have songs about, like... But we definitely, like, twist it around. Like, we have songs where the lyrics are about his vasectomy, and on our new album Out of Africa that came out on Alternative Tentacles, we have, like, track number 2 is a song called Iraqi Curator, where it's about a museum curator in Baghdad who steals the Apple of Eden. And the GIs, the American GIs, everybody, the Shiites, everybody's trying to get in there and find this and steal this away. And then he ends up, you know, deceiving them all, but being tortured in the process. And he still doesn't tell them anything. And I mean, there's just all, I can't even do it. I can't even do Johnny justice. The only thing that I can say about the lyrics is that I wrote a song, like, for instance, I was inspired by his approach, and I wrote a song on the new album called Cassava, which is basically the Arawak Indians' point of view of seeing Columbus land and then committing mass suicide because of what the Europeans were doing to them. And, you know, that's the kind of shit you can't get away with even entertaining in a punk rock band or something like that. Like, how the hell are you going to write about that when it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, you know?
Right.
So that's kind of going along with the breaking down the boundaries and not giving a shit and just writing and singing about what you want to do.
So you sort of answered my question there when you're talking about, you know, your lead singer being an archaeologist, and I was going to ask about the title of your most recent recording, Out of Africa. That's obviously where titles like that are coming from.
It would seem obvious, but the true story is that, we were flying to New York for CMJ, and... Like I said, like, this, the band has been kind of set up to not argue and not worry about, like, the little things as far as, like, the writing process and whatnot. But the one thing that most bands have a problem with, the two biggest bitches of the music being in a band is A, picking your band name, and B, naming your fucking albums. And it's just something that nobody will ever agree on. And every, you know, anybody who's listening to this, anybody that is in a band, they'll just be like, no shit, man. But, like, so basically it came down to, like, we were just, like, we had everything done, everything was recorded, and, you know, and we were flying to New York to do some shows around CMJ. And we were on the plane, and I said, like, dude, I gotta put my foot down here on this, like, this is the idea. I have an idea. Johnny, pass around your lyrics, and then we'll take a pad of paper and we'll write down album titles out of the lyrics. And it totally does pertain to anthropology and archaeology in a sense that Out of Africa was one of the winners the winner out of all of the choices that we came from because of the song Duende War on our new album is written about the pygmies, who are mythological or not, it's up to you, and how they were being hunted and have became extinct and you know, once again, Johnny should be here to answer those kind of questions, but it's from that song, and basically, so it's on the song title is actually called Duende War Out of Africa, and we picked that. It had nothing to do with the movie, which I still haven't seen, by the way.
Where did you guys record this album at?
We did the we recorded this and our first EP, which is called Cafeteria Brutalia, at this studio in San Francisco in the Potrero Hill neighborhood of San Francisco called Lucky Cat. And it's owned and operated by a beautiful man named Kurt Schlegel, who was the Melvins sound engineer for a number of years, touring the world with them. And just in time, over the years, I mean, he's recorded a lot of stuff over there. He's done bands like 3 Day Stubble, Todi Moshi, the Turks are going to record there. Larry had done some projects over there before, and he is this magic drum room like sound that comes from there, and so we wanted to go there and stay at home and just kind of stay in the mindset of creating it in San Francisco, because this place is so inspiring. It's good to stay grounded and have a chance to go home and get something to eat and grab some coffee, you know, on foot on the way to the studio, and just so that was where we did it.
Do you guys ever feel like, I mean, San Francisco is a great city for inspiration, but I mean, how do you feel about the music scene here?
I think it's like totally amazing, like mind-blowing. I mean, the only thing that anybody could complain about, and especially the people that were here throughout from the 80s and throughout the 90s, is that there's not really any all-ages warehouses in San Francisco anymore because of the dot-com money came up, bought them all out, and then abandoned them, so they're all sitting around, and they can't be purchased by anybody because all the money, you know, costs too much to buy these things back from these guys who are sitting on them or whatever. But, I mean, the bars, you know, there's a lot of fantastic music that is being played in the bars. I'm totally honored to be a part of this music scene that is just continuously put out, like, mind-blowing bands. The list is incredible. Like, going down all the way down the line, I mean, if you want to go even back to the Grateful Dead and that scene through the 90s and through the 2000s. I mean, I can't believe we're almost at the end of the first 10 years of 2000, but yeah, it's just really cool. I mean, there's the list of names is amazing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm totally honored to be a part of the music scene at all in any aspect. And
so you've been able to tour quite a bit and play a lot of shows of all the bands you've played with, all the shows that you played. Is there one in particular that stands out in your mind that you look back and you think, that was fucking it?
I think it was, that's a good question. I think that there was two shows that pop into mind immediately. One was, we were lucky enough to play New Year's Eve at a club in San Francisco called Slim's, and we opened the show, and Comets on Fire, which are one of the very influential band on me, and then the Melvins. So you had, you know, two generations, if you will, if you want to call it generations, of bands that have San Francisco roots or ties or whatever playing, and then we had a chance to open. So that was pretty amazing. That was a hell of a way to bring in a new year. And then recently we were lucky enough to be invited to play at Jello Biafra's 50th birthday party, which was at this club in San Francisco called Great American Music Hall, which is this gorgeous preserved venue from 1907 that has been operating under many different names since then, and anybody who's anybody has played there, and it's a big place. It has like a balcony that wraps around, and Jello played with the Melvins and with his new band Axis of Evil, and we played with a band from Seattle called Akimbo, and It was, I believe it was sold out, and it was just, like, one of those magic things where, like, we were bringing our stuff on stage, and people were just, like, screaming for rock music, basically. Not for us in particular, but they were just really excited, and, yeah, the response was pretty overwhelming. Like, I pretty much felt like I got in a fight with 50 people after that show, because I just was, like, totally beat up and, like, mentally exhausted from how amazing it was. But, yeah, that was amazing. I think those two are definitely the standouts for me.
And of all the shows you've ever seen, like, think back to all the bands you've seen. Is there one show in particular that just stands out in your mind as being, like, that was the supreme show for you to be at?
God, man, it's so awesome that another aspect of living in San Francisco that is so lucky, or even in the Bay Area for that matter, is that you don't ever miss anything, and you always have access to go and see these people that are, and you get to see stuff that is, like, right in the moment. Like, a lot of bands that are based on the West Coast, like, they release an album and they start touring, and if they're coming for the South or from the North, they land in San Francisco with that, like, intensity and that inspiration that they've harnessed from releasing this record, and you get to see them in this state where they're just on fire. And I think a couple things that stand out to me are, when are we talking about? Are we talking, like, recently or in, like,
just in your whole life, the one show that just
That's easy, actually. That's kind of easy. The one show that changed my life forever was Slayer when I was 13 years old. Slayer at the Clash of the Titans tour in Lakeland, Florida.
Wow.
That was the one that I actually, you know, came to after that, after banging my head almost clean off my neck, came to and said, you know what, I know what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I don't care what I have to do. This is what I'm doing. So right. I think that was the one.
That's amazing. That's good. So, of all the stuff that you're listening to right now, if you were to go through your CDs, records, iPod, whatever, what would you recommend that your fans and our listeners be listening to right now?
I'm whipping out my iPod and going through what I've been listening to as we speak. But I do listen to vinyl only at my house. This iPod is strictly for walking purposes. While I was walking to meet you, Shady, I was listening to The Grifters, which is a band from Memphis that put out a bunch of material, a bunch of four-track stuff. They're a really psychedelic band from the 90s that was a huge influence on me. I've been listening to, let me think of what I've been listening to on vinyl. Mozart, actually, the Mozart's Requiem is, like, and Don Giovanni, actually. Don Giovanni, I think, is my favorite Mozart. It's one of those things where when you listen to that, it's almost like you can forget that rock music exists for a second, because nothing that has happened since him will ever equal what he's done. So it's just kind of like, all right, listen to him and apply whatever, or be influenced however you want to, but it's really powerful. Like, it really has a big impact on me. I've actually been jamming the new Howlin' Rain album, Magnificent Fiend. I think that dude Ethan Miller and the guys in his band, but that dude in particular is just kind of totally on fire. Like, the dude has just been putting out killer shit for years in the Bay Area, and he's just kind of like, I'm really excited for him to be, like, on tour with the Black Crowes and, like, reaching bigger audiences. That's good for him, and good for the music scene too as well.
Yeah. If you were to go through your records and your iPod. Everyone's got that one dirty little secret, that one shameful thing that you don't want everybody else to know.
Oh, I was just thinking about this.
Your little guilty pleasure.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what that is. I just realized that I had one, and I totally, like, oh, crap. God, if it's not a guilty pleasure, it must not be, it's not popping into my mind too fast. But I know it's at my house.
We're all going to go over to your house and start looking through everything.
God, that's going to be... Well,
Well, while you think about that, what about the very first record you ever went and bought? With your own money, got on your bicycle or whatever, got your mom and dad to drive you down to the shop?
with my own money, because the first stuff that I actually, I think the first tapes that I actually ever got was like kind of like me kind of telling my grandma that I wanted to go shop for tapes, and she would like go and buy me something else, but she'd give me an allowance. So I bought like all these, you know, like Megadeth and Metallica and Ozzy and Slayer, and then she'd come back and I'd have that like one tape that she like was cool with, and she for some reason never realized that I spent the money on all this other stuff that she probably wouldn't have wanted me to listen to. But
the stuff that your grandmother bought you is probably the guilty pleasure.
It could be. No, you know what? I mean, does Ozzy No Rest for the Wicked count? I mean, that's not really embarrassing, though.
No, it's not like it's Kylie Minogue or anything.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I guess in this day and age, like, say, I guess even Block Party would be considered kind of cheesy in a way. But, oh, you know what? You know what? I think I got it.
What's that?
I kind of like some of the songs that band, what were they called? The Killers? That's kind of janky. I might lose some credit for that. It kind of, you know, whatever.
Depends on what circle you're hanging with that night.
I like listening to them at work.
Yeah.
I don't have the disc, but, you know, I listen to it, I'm like, oh, all right. That's catchy.
Cool. What can we expect from Triclops in the future?
Gluing more hair to the sides of our vinyl albums before we go on tour. Because we're trying to, you know, make things more collectible and more interesting. So when we did our CD release party for Out of Africa on Alternative Tentacles, we glued hair to the side of them and they sold out instantly. So we gotta make sure that the people in the we're going on tour in America in the summer and in the fall, and we gotta make sure we got plenty of hairy vinyl for everybody.
Hairy vinyl.
Yeah.
And of all the songs you've recorded, what would you guys say is the one that you guys are most proud of?
All the songs that we've recorded?
Recorded, played, you know, your song, a Triclops song, you know, whether it's been recorded or not, just the one that you guys are really just most proud of.
On the first EP, Cafeteria Brutalia, which came out on Sick Room Records out of Chicago, that I haven't mentioned yet, it's Bug Bomb. On Out of Africa, for me, I would say probably, possibly the first track, March of the Half Babies. Couple new songs that I don't even want to get into yet, but one song that people might actually know because we've been playing it quite a bit live is called With SARS I'll Ride the Wind. That one seems to be like I thought that I wouldn't be able to write a song after that one, so luckily that's not the case, but I think that one's definitely one of the ones I'm most proud of.
Oh, that's excellent. We're all looking forward to hearing everything that's coming up with you guys. Looking forward to catching up on some shows with Triclops. It's been great meeting you, Christian.
It's great to chat with everybody. I hope that people check out the stuff online and we get to have you out at the shows. Thank you very much for having me, Shady.
Do you have anyone you want to say hello to out there?
All of you people are equally important. Thank you for supporting piratepods.com, and go, you know, if you have 5 seconds, get off of MySpace and come see the live music.
Thank you very much. This is Shady, Mod Pirate, at the Gold Cane in San Francisco. We've been talking with Christian from Triclops.
We want to, the closing words that we will say is that Alex, the owner of Gold Cane, was generous enough to lower the music for us to do this interview. So if you guys are in the hate ever in San Francisco, come stop by the Gold Cane. They got the cheapest drinks on the street.
Gold Cane rocks. Thank you very much.
Bye. You'll never be human like us. We won't let you be human like us.
We're at war with the middle.